Hello, crackheads. You're listening to Paranormal Cracktivity. I'm Justin.
And I am Dreek.
Thank you guys so much for joining us again for part two of Dennis Nielsen. If you... Yes, if you haven't listened to the first part, you'll be very confused, so you might want to go do that. But, Dreek, how are you doing today?
How am I doing today?
Today.
I felt better, but I've also felt worse.
I am glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that.
Justin, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty well today. I've been waking up earlier these days, you know, earlier with the sun these days, and making breakfast and whatnot and stretching. But yeah, today was harder than other days, but I'm glad to be here.
What time do you wake up?
What time do typically I wake up around 6 or 6:30? Yeah.
Okay.
But
you're doing it. You're doing it.
But I spent most of today researching Dennis Nielsen, so I'm in a little bit of a brain fog, also because I'm a little high, but I'm ready to get into the story.
Let's go, Justin. Let's go. Make my life miserable.
I can't wait. I can't wait to. Truly cannot. Okay. So, when we left off with Dennis Nielsen, he was jacking off in front of a mirror and pretending to be asleep. So that is revolting. And after serving as a corporal in the Middle East, he went back to Britain for a year before being transferred to Berlin, where he continued to work as a chef for the army. So remember, he was he's still in the army. He's moving around in the army. He's developing these awful habits and starting to branch out a little bit, drinking a lot more. Do you remember? Do you have any more questions? Should we do a little bit more of a recap, or do you think that we're all good?
I think we're all good. If you missed part one, you need to go check it out.
Yeah, yeah. If you missed part one, you should go check it out. So while in Berlin, he would frequently wake up next to strangers, and on one occasion, he even experimented with a German woman, and he describes the experience as overrated and depressing, apart from the climax. He was then transferred to Bavaria. I'm sorry, I think I spelled that wrong and it really tripped me up. He was then transferred to Bavaria for a brief 2 months. Here he made some good friends with the soldiers by cooking them good meals, and he also had a very brief and potential romance with a local girl, again, whom he danced with at a local beer festival. She led him to the veranda and they kissed before they were forced apart by her family. In 1971, he was stationed in the Shetland Islands at 242 Signals, where he went drinking and dancing at the Maybury Club. The Shetlands had a proud Scandinavian ancestry, and since Nielsen's father was Norwegian, he hoped to feel a kinship with the people here. He also began to pursue filmmaking while in the Shetlands, and recorded much of its beautiful landscape while wandering around, which he still does constantly.
Question.
Yes, question. Answer.
He's Scandinavian, and those people are Norwegian.
It's the same.
Scandinavia and Norwegia are the...
Norwegian people are Scandinavian. Because... Yeah, because at one point, the Viking people, the Scandinavian people, who weren't all Vikings, the Scandinavian people settled in Norway and Sweden and Iceland and maybe a couple other places that I'm missing. And so those people are Scandinavian, but now those are separate countries. So, So they have a Scandinavian ancestry because the Vikings went to Scotland and Britain. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
It makes perfect sense.
Okay. So So because his father was Norwegian, he was also Scandinavian, and he felt a kinship with the people here because they had a Scandinavian ancestry. And during his last two months in the army would be served here, and he would spend much of this time with an 18-year-old private whose name was Terry Finch. And this was the summer of 1972. Dennis and Terry would go for long walks together, and they would chat about life and record films. Dennis was infatuated with Terry and even states that he loved him. But fuck that, truly, because Dennis is a monster. In the films that they would make together, Nielsen would often be the director and Finch the actor, and sometimes Nielsen would instruct him to lie still and play dead. He enjoyed feeling a sense of control, which will come into play later, and he states that he would watch these scenes later on and masturbate. So, gross. The two remained close friends for a while, but eventually Terry drifted away from Dennis, naturally, because Dennis is disgusting.
And I would too.
Yeah, and he had very intense feelings for Terry, which left Dennis feeling deeply depressed because he was down bad. And just before leaving the Shetlands, Dennis destroyed the films and says that it took him years to fully recover from losing Terry. And Terry eventually married shortly after this, while Dennis returned home to Stricken.
Terry married a woman, right?
I'm going
to... It was illegal to be gay.
Because it's illegal, so you can't... Yeah. I'm going to say yes.
Poor woman.
Poor Terry. But
I hope he was a good husband.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So after 11 years in the army, Nielsen is now 27 years old, and he was feeling contemptuous for the work that he had been instructed to do. He didn't like being told what to do. So he started looking for a new job, and he spent about 5 weeks at home, during which an incident occurred between Dennis and his older brother, Olav, whom he visited in Fraserburgh. Nielsen felt attacked when his brother expressed disdain for a movie involving homosexual themes, which they were watching together with Olav's wife. So later on, the two got into a fight at the station hotel, and Dennis returned home and locked himself in the garden shed for 2 hours, his parents' home, by the way. He says that he never spoke to his brother again. So this is, yeah, just like a weird little episode where basically he felt attacked because his brother like didn't like this movie that they were watching that involved, I guess, a gay couple. And so yeah, they got into a fight and he goes to his mom's house and locks himself in a shed.
I mean, do I feel bad for... I feel bad that the situation occurred. I don't necessarily feel bad for him, but I feel bad that that's something that had to occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In someone's life.
I mean, he never developed a relationship with his brother, so it's not like things went from bad to worse. Yeah. You know, it's like there was just nothing to begin with.
There was nothing there, and he just put cement over the nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So around this time, he started to have nightmares. His mother said that he would write poetry and listen to classical music while drinking late into the night. Nielsen soon decided to become a police officer because there wasn't really anything else that he could do, and he didn't want to stay in Stricken at his parents' house. So he became a police officer and he moved to London. During this time, in 1973, he was taken to the mortuary behind Brent Town Hall by his superior, Peter Wellstead. They looked at the corpses, which had been cut open for examination, and while his colleague Ian was feeling ill from the experience, Nielsen was fascinated. City life, however, plunged Dennis once again into the abyss of isolation. To solve this, he started getting involved in the gay nightlife of London, which was at this time still very secretive, and he started having some more casual sexual encounters with men, though he wanted a relationship and wasn't satisfied by these experiences. He decided to resign from the police at the end of 1973, because he was coming more into his sexuality and he felt conflicted about arresting gay men because it was illegal and he was made to arrest gay men. So he left the police and worked odd jobs as a security guard in the months that followed while moving from room to room.
This baffles me. I'm still not over the hump that is like, it's literally illegal to be homosexual. That's like saying it's illegal to be black.
Mm.
Or like it's illegal to be white. Like you literally just, you can't help who you're attracted to.
Mm. Yeah, it's truly baffling, truly. Mm. Yeah. So he left the police and worked odd jobs and moved from room to room. He quickly grew tired of this and resigned and decided to apply for unemployment. So he was submitted for a job in the civil service and was accepted for a position as a clerical officer in the Department of Unemployment, which is where he worked for the remainder of his free life. So Nielsen is now working in the job center, getting people jobs, and this is where he stays. So over the next couple of years, Nielsen continued to meet strange men in pubs, having promiscuous encounters, but failing to develop any real relationships. One day, 17-year-old David Painter came to the job center seeking employment, and Nielsen was on the case. He told David, however, that there were no jobs available and sent him away. Later on, Nielsen bumped into David on the street and they began talking, which led to David going back home with Nielsen. They drank and watched a Western film before heading to bed. Nielsen made sexual advances on David, which he declined. Later on in the night, David awoke to Nielsen pointing a camera at his face, and he started fighting Nielsen off, who eventually surrendered and called the police and an ambulance for David. Nielsen was interrogated at the Williston Green police station until the hospital confirmed that David had not been molested. David's parents decided not to press charges to avoid the courts, and so the incident was basically forgotten. So that's really gross. I guess he was fighting him off so hard that like he got seriously hurt, and for some reason Nielsen called an ambulance for him.
Things not to do.
Things not to do.
Put a camera in someone's face as they sleep.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to agree.
That is permission for me to literally beat you up.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Okay.
I can't beat anybody.
You could beat Nielsen up, this man.
I could.
So, as time went on, Nielsen became more lonely and depressed, and his sexual perversions escalated even further. He continued to use a mirror to enact sexual fantasies, but now he would imagine that he was dead, and sometimes in a restricted or violated position. He says that this was the only way to reach a state of, quote, emotional and physical perfection, end quote. Ugh. Now, during this time in Nielsen's life, he received news that his father had died and that he had received an inheritance of 1,000 euros, which would be about $3,639 today. So he also discovered at this time that his biological father's name was Olav Magnus Mockheim, and that Nielsen was an alias that he used when he was in Scotland. So, even though he had never known his father, this was a pretty shocking news for a man who was already struggling with his sense of identity. yeah.
How to make a murderer, 101.
Mm-hmm.
101.
Totally, yeah.
Did he not think to tell the woman that he impregnated that, hey, this isn't my real name?
Right. Mm.
Does that not baffle the, like, ugh.
Not only that, but one of her children was named after him. Olav Jr. I mean, yeah.
Psych, JK.
This is insane. Not long after this, in November 1975, Nielsen met David Galishan, outside the Champion Pub, and the two decided to move in together the following morning. So, right. So, again, like, Nielsen, he would kind of prey on people that were lonely and that didn't have anywhere else to go. So, like, he would meet these people and bring them home, and they would, like, have nowhere else to go. And he would be like, hey, move in with me. And they'd be like, okay. But in this situation, with David Galishan, they actually developed a little bit of a relationship. So Nielsen used his inheritance to rent a flat at 195 Melrose Avenue, where he and Galishan would live together. There was an alley behind the house, which they cleaned up and planted a big garden, and Nielsen negotiated with the landlord to have exclusive access to this garden. They also bought a dog together, which Dennis named Bleep, after the sound that it made, she made. Dennis also bought a parakeet named Harnish, and and Galishan adopted a stray cat whom they called Dee Dee. So for a while,
okay, that's kind of normal.
That right, that one's kind of normal.
What was the parrot's name? Halishan?
Harnish.
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 Yeah, I'm glad he hadn't. Did he have kids?
No.
I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Your name game, weak.
Mm-hmm. So for a while, they had what seemed to be a stable relationship, but Galishan quickly began losing interest in Nielsen because, again, he's gross and dirty, and started finding other partners, and Nielsen also did the same thing. And then in the summer of 1977, David Galishan moved out of the Melrose flat. And after this, Dennis occupied all of his time with work because he didn't have any friends. He tried desperately to get a promotion and was refused several times because his relationships with colleagues were described as outspoken and overbearing. He was eventually successful and was posted to the Kentish Town Job Center much later on, where his colleagues described him as secretive and erratic. So back at his flat, when not at work, Nielsen would walk Bleep up and down Melrose Avenue before pouring a drink and lying on the floor to watch some television. He also really enjoyed listening to music, and Brian Masters gives us a list of some of his favorites in the book. Are you ready for them, Dreek?
Absolutely.
So, quote, Nielsen would listen for hours to Elgar, Mahler, Britten, Grieg, Tchaikovsky, Sibelius, or some sophisticated pop music, Rick Wakeman, Mike Oldfield, and O Superman by Laurie Anderson. So there's some of that.
I almost gave him a compliment.
And then
I almost gave him a compliment.
I don't know. I'm not.
Justin's like, I'm not giving him a compliment.
I'm not giving him a compliment. So, Dennis kept busy meeting boys in pubs, and he had a succession of short-term flatmates and love interests, but nothing substantial that ever lasted more than like a night or two. And on one occasion, when three young men were sleeping over at his house, he took a jacket and put it over the oil stove, lit the stove, and then took Bleep outside to the garden while the room filled up with smoke. And then when the guys started to wake up, he jumped into action and pretended to save them. So, toxic behavior.
How to be toxic 101.
Yeah.
Start the fire. Save people from fire.
But at the same time, these were just like random people that like he invited them into his house, and they were like, "Yeah, sure, right?" I mean, I don't know.
The kahunas on this man.
Right.
Starts fire. Saves people from said fire. Gaslighting 101. Gaslighting.
The OG gaslighter.
OG gaslighter.
Oil lighting. Okay. So there was one boy named Steve Martin who Nielsen had met at the Golden Lion, and the two developed a relationship for a short time. Martin lived with Nielsen at Melrose Ave for about 4 months, but he was a drifter and quickly decided to move on. These intimate experiences, however, were not enough to satisfy the perverse desires of his corrupt mind. At this time, Dennis would lay out on his bed in front of the mirror and lose himself in his imagination. He would put talc on his face, charcoal under his eyes, and blue tint on his lips. He would make fake blood and put it in holes on his shirt and make himself appear dead, while looking in the mirror and imagining that his body was being found by an old man in the woods, which was then defiled. His issues with abandonment and dependency, along with intense loneliness, came together with his perverted perception of love, sex, and death until his fantasies leaked into reality. Drake, are you drinking anything tonight?
I'm drinking Dream World Limited Edition Coca-Cola. If you want Coca-Cola, try Dream World Limited Edition.
Is there any liquor in it?
No, I'm saving myself for marriage.
Oh. Unfortunate.
I know.
Well.
Oh, you said liquor.
Liquor?
Yeah.
What? Stop. Oh my God.
I'm still saving myself for marriage.
You're killing me. Oh my God. This is going to be the best palate cleanser ever. I'm drinking bourbon because I need some.
I drank red wine last week. I had a friend, I had a mutual friend of ours come over for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I made braised short ribs with garlic mashed potatoes. And I drank a lot of wine.
That sounds nice.
First time I ever got hungover from wine.
What kind of wine was it?
Couldn't tell you.
That sounds nice.
But I bet you it'll be the last time I get drunk, get hungover from wine.
I'm willing to bet that's not true.
Wrong answer.
We have some murdering to get back to.
Really? I forgot we were doing that.
On December 30th, 1978, Stephen Dean Holmes was celebrating the new year at the Cricklewood Arms pub. Stephen was born March 22nd, 1964, in Ireland, and had been attending a concert in Willesden, but was unable to buy any alcohol from the pub on account of that he was 14. After chatting with the bartender for a little bit and trying to get a drink, Stephen was approached by 33-year-old Dennis Nielsen, who soon invites Stephen back to his flat for a drink since the bartender would not concede. The two went back to Melrose Ave and had a few drinks before undressing and getting into Nielsen's bed without any activities happening. The following morning, Dennis awoke and started to touch Stephen, who was still sleeping. He began to think about how Stephen would likely want to leave because it was now morning and how he desperately wanted him to stay. So, Dennis reaches down to the floor and picks up his necktie. He carefully slipped it under Stephen's neck and pulled as tightly as he could. Stephen quickly awoke and began fighting back. The two fell to the floor, but Dennis did not lose his grip, and eventually Stephen lost consciousness. He was still breathing, however, so Dennis went to the kitchen and filled a plastic bucket with water. He placed Stephen's head in the bucket and held him down until the bubbles stopped. He then sat him up in a chair, and he smoked and made some coffee. Bleep came in from the garden and sniffed the body's leg, and Nielsen told her to stop. After sitting around for a while and staring at the body, Nielsen washed it in the bath and then placed it in the bed. He then went for a stroll down Willesden High Road to clear his head. While out, he purchased a cooking pot and an electric knife. When he returned to his flat, he dressed the body and put it back into bed. He then took a bath and then got into bed with the body. He held it and attempted to rape the corpse, but was not able to. Then he put the body on the floor and covered it with an old curtain, where he left it until the following evening, when he decided to pry up the floorboards to hide the body. This plan failed because rigor mortis had set in and the body kept getting stuck, so he propped it up against a wall and waited until the next day. Dennis describes his process, saying, "I laid him on the floor and worked the limbs loose. I eased him into his new bed and covered him up." Ew. I hate giving quotes from him, but I just want you guys to understand, like, in his really sick mind, like, the way he says these things, "I eased him into his new bed." Really disgusting. Because he doesn't understand death. His brain is still fucked up.
It's not fully developed yet.
It's not fully developed at 33. A week later, he took the body out again, cleaned it, and masturbated over it. He then hung the body up by the ankles and left it there while he slept, and then in the morning, he violated the corpse again. And then he laid it out and put it back underneath the floorboards. So then he went on about his usual business, working at the job center and watching TV with Bleep for 7.5 months. And then on August 11th, 1979, he brought the body back up and put it in bags, tied it with string, and then he took it to the garden and burned it where nobody could see. And he also put some rubber into the fire to mask the smell. He then pounded the ashes and raked them into the ground. 3 months later, in October of 1979, Dennis met a young... Okay, I'm going to pause there. So, that's probably as graphic as it's going to get, because most of them happen in a very similar way. So, we can take a break and take a deep breath, because that was a lot.
I did not enjoy that at all.
Me neither. Me neither. 3 months later, in October of 1979, Dennis met a young Chinese student named Andrew Ho, and the two went back to Melrose Ave. After some talk of bondage and money, one thing led to another, and Nielsen tied up Ho and put a necktie around his neck while talking about his dangerous life and what could happen to him. Ho panicked, obviously, and threw a candlestick at him and ran out before calling the police, who came to investigate, but once again, no charges were brought up against Nielsen. Kenneth Ockenden was a 23-year-old Canadian who was touring England while visiting relatives. On December 3, 1979, he left the Central Hotel with his camera to see the city and happened to meet Dennis Nielsen in a West End pub around lunchtime. The two chatted and had some drinks before setting off to see the city together and taking some pictures, eventually returning back to Melrose Avenue and having a meal together. They picked up some rum, whiskey, and beers and then sat down to watch some TV and listen to music. Once again, Nielsen began to think about Ockenden leaving and going back to Canada, and it made him panic. He put on a record and gave the headphones to Kenneth. While he was listening, Nielsen wrapped the cords around his neck and strangled him, dragging him across the floor while saying, "Let me listen to the music as well." Once Kenneth was dead, he put the headphones on and continued listening to the music while drinking some Bacardi. He then did the same thing that he did to the other body. He washed it and dressed it and put it in bed and slept next to it. Before leaving for work the next day, he put the body in the cupboard for a couple of days. He placed the body in a chair and took photos of it with a cheap Polaroid camera. He would place the body on top of himself while lying in bed and watching TV, and he would talk to it. He also violated the corpse by crossing the legs and raping between the thighs. Another gruesome detail, which also happens a couple of other times. He continued to take the body out and sit with it for about 4 more times over the next 2 weeks. So that was Kenneth Ockenden. Martin Duffy was a 16-year-old boy from Merseyside area who had left home in May of 1980. His troubled childhood and his run-ins with the police had led him to the streets of London, where he slept in train stations, which is where he met Dennis Nielsen. Nielsen recalls that Duffy only drank two beers before getting into bed, where Dennis strangled him in his sleep before submerging his head in a bucket of water. Once again, he washed the body in the bath and then took it back to the bed and did some gross stuff to it. And then he stored it in the cupboard for 2 days before placing it under the floorboards. That was Martin Duffy. Billy Sutherland was a 26-year-old man from Edinburgh who had a bunch of tattoos. Billy and Dennis met in a pub near Piccadilly Circus, and they went out drinking together. When Nielsen was ready to go home, Billy expressed that he had nowhere to go, and so Nielsen bought him a train ticket and took him home to Melrose Ave. There's no specific account of Billy Sutherland's murder, though Nielsen says that he strangled him in the front and there was a dead body in the morning. Sometimes Dennis said that he would just like not remember certain things, and there's certain people that he doesn't really remember at all. Right. He talks and talks and talks. But that was Billy Sutherland, and his mother reported him missing, who was in Scotland. Malcolm Barlow, a 23-year-old, was living on the streets of London, doing anything he could for money. He suffered from epilepsy and had spent most of his life in care or in hospitals. On September 17th, 1981, Dennis left his flat for work around 7:30 a.m., and he spotted Malcolm Barlow lying against a garden wall a few houses down. And Malcolm said that his legs had given out because of his epilepsy medication, so Nielsen helped him back to his flat and made him a cup of coffee while calling an ambulance, which came and took Malcolm to Park Royal Hospital. The next day, he was released and went back to Nielsen's flat to express his gratitude. Nielsen cooked him a meal, and then he started drinking. According to his account, Nielsen gave Barlow a couple of drinks, reluctantly, after he had argued with him about mixing drinks with pills, and so Barlow passed out shortly afterwards on the sofa. Nielsen thought for a moment, and then decided to murder him. And he choked Malcolm with his hands until he stopped breathing, and then went to bed. The following morning, he dragged the body to the kitchen and put it under the sink and went to work. So there are a few other anonymous victims who are remembered by characteristics that he could remember, like their tattoos, like their tattoos or their hair. There's one account where Nielsen says that Fanfare for the Common Man by Copland was playing while he strangled an anonymous victim and washed their body in the bath. Yes.
When you say anonymous, does that mean we know who these victims are? Or
no.
You mean unidentified?
Maybe unidentified is the word I should be using. The book said anonymous, but you're totally right, because they're not anonymous. They're just unidentified. Because he doesn't remember who they are. So, Fanfare for the Common Man by Copland was playing while he strangled an unidentified victim and washed their body. He gives more detail in this specific account about his feelings of control and ownership while handling the body, which I had mentioned earlier. He would sit the body in a chair next to him and hold it and talk to it while watching television. And so all in all, if Nielsen was telling the truth about there being 15 victims, then 12 of them were murdered and disposed of at the Melrose Avenue flat. And of those 12, only the 5 that I just mentioned have been identified. Yeah.
I feel like it's like 2022 and that like there are ways to identify these people through like DNA. I feel like.
I would hope so. But then again, like, this was 1970s, late 1970s, and he burned the bodies and, like, mashed up the ashes and raked them into the dirt. He literally like turned them literally turned them into dirt, which, by the way, guys, takes a long time to turn an entire body into ashes.
And doesn't it have to be like really hot?
Not speaking from personal experience.
I am.
Yes, it also has to be extremely, extremely hot. But
well, like I feel like it's really sad because if we don't have these people identified, then I feel like there was no one looking for them.
Yeah, that was part of the reason why he was able to operate for so long, is because nobody was looking for most of these people. Only a couple of them were ever identified as missing people, because most of them were runaways and homeless.
That's sad that nobody reported these people missing and still haven't reported these people missing. Do you think it has something to do with the fact that these were gay men that were going missing?
100%, yeah. Some of them were. Some of them were just homeless. And like we'll see, like, yeah. So for a lot of these murders were sexually motivated, but at some points it seems like he was just doing it because he enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, very fucked up. But did you have a question?
I have a lot of questions, but I'll ask you when we stop recording.
Okay, we're almost done. We're getting close to the end of this part. Surprise, guys! This is going to be a three-parter. So, around the middle of 1981, the landlord at Melrose Avenue decided to renovate and asked Dennis to vacate the property. So he went out and found a new flat at 23 Cranley Gardens. The day before leaving, he dissected the bodies with a kitchen knife and burned them in the back gardens, along with an old car tire to hide the smell. 2 months after moving to Cranley Gardens, Nielsen met John Howlett, whom he knew as John the Guardsman. They had a drink and a chat and then parted ways before meeting again in March of 1982 in the Salisbury Pub on St. Martin's Lane. They grew tired of the slow service and went back to Nielsen's flat at Cranley Gardens, where they watched some TV and drank. John got tired and asked Nielsen if he could lay down. Nielsen went back to bed around 1 a.m. and found John in his bed. He tried to get him up and offered to buy him a taxi, but Howlett did not want to get out of bed. So Dennis grabbed a loose upholstery strap from the armchair in the living room. He wound it around John's neck and said, "It's about time you went," while strangling him. A violent struggle ensued and Nielsen was nearly overpowered. Once he was incapacitated, Nielsen took him to the bathroom and drowned him in the bath, where he left him until the next morning. So, like, this is one, like, an example, like I was saying, this wasn't sexually motivated. Like, this person was just, like, in his bed, and he was like, oh, this is a solution to this problem that I have right now, right? Which is so fucked up, but that's how he thought, you know? And he was like, oh, this is fun, I'll just do it.
I just don't get how, like, he started off murdering people because he was lonely, and now when he has the opportunity to have someone there, he's like, oh.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So I don't know if I believe him with a whole, like, oh, I killed them because they were going to leave. I don't know. It just seems like the only reason why I killed these people is because I thought they were going to leave. And then when someone isn't trying to leave, you still kill them.
Yeah, totally. That's an astute observation, Drake. Yeah. Interesting. 27-year-old Graham Allen came back to Nielsen's flat looking for a hot meal. Nielsen cooked him an omelet, which he fell asleep while eating, and then he strangled him. And that's all the information that I got from the book that I read, but I might have some more for you on that victim in the next episode. So, Stephen Sinclair, 20 years old, was originally from Perth, Scotland. But like most of Nielsen's victims, he was drifting on the streets of London looking for lodging and money anywhere he could find it. Sinclair had a troubled personality and mental health issues, along with drug abuse, specifically speed. And on January 26th, 1983, some of his mates saw him go off with a strange man who we can assume to be Dennis Nielsen. Nielsen brought him a burger from McDonald's. Nielsen bought him a burger from McDonald's and then picked up some alcohol before going back to Cranley Gardens. At one point during the evening, Sinclair went to the bathroom and Nielsen had assumed that he was shooting up. So Sinclair fell asleep in the chair after coming back, and while Dennis was listening to a rock opera called Tommy. Have you heard of that?
A rock opera called Tommy?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, me neither.
I'll look it up, though.
Yeah, I'm interested. So Nielsen strangled Sinclair in his sleep with a necktie, and then he washed the body in the bath before placing it in the bed, just like he did with all the others. But he did not violate his body like the others. In this account, Nielsen talks about wanting to relieve Sinclair of his pain and feeling like he had just eased his burden. He laid in bed with the body and looked at it in the mirror, along with himself. And he says, quote, "I just lay there, and a great peace came over me. I felt that this was it, the meaning of life, death, everything. No fear, no pain, no guilt." End quote. He also said a lot of other really nasty, disgusting, fucked up stuff, but Stephen Sinclair was the last victim of Dennis Nielsen. Thankfully.
He was number 15?
He was number 15, according to Nielsen's count, but he was the eighth victim that has been identified. And here, Nielsen is in Cranley Gardens, and this is January of 1983, January 26th, so as we know, he gets arrested on February 9th, 1983, just the following next 2 weeks. So we're going to get into those nitty-gritty details next time, along with the trial and a little bit of prison stuff. Hopefully that's going to be a shorter episode for you, because I'm excited to get out of this guy's head. But I hope you hated that. Because I did.
I hated it more than you did, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty, pretty bad.
Well, if you have any case suggestions, let us know. Shoot us an email at paranormalcractivitypodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at paranormalcractivitypodcast. We do not have a Twitter.
That. We do not have a Twitter or Facebook.
Or YouTube.
Or YouTube.
Soon come.
Oh, yeah. Tariq, did you happen to hear our November bonus chat on Patreon?
Justin, did I hear it? I recorded it.
No way. Did you? Were you there? You were there when that happened?
Yeah, were you there? Were you not there? Oh. I could have swore you were.
Well, I mean, I heard it. I heard it on Patreon, and I hear that you can't hear it anywhere else, actually. You have to be a patron.
I actually heard the same thing. You know what else I heard?
What did you hear?
I don't know. Tell me. I feel like I was going to say something, like, really funny, but, like, it didn't come to me in time, so I just had to let it go.
You can donate.
Sometimes you have to let... You have to let things go, people.
Sometimes you just have to let things go.
And sometimes, like, your money.
You can just let go of $3 on Patreon. And you can get access to bonus content, as well as early access to episodes available every Sunday.
Absolutely. We might even throw in some merch for you.
Only if you're a heavy hitting donor, you might get some merch.
What are the levels again?
Oh, you got me.
I think it's like jelly bean.
If you want access to bonus content.
If you want access to. You would have to sign up for.
Then you can become a jelly bean for only $3 a month.
Or you can just be a Casper the Ghost for one.
Or you can be a Casper the Ghost for one. That's right, yes. But if you want some merch, then you,
you got to be with Roxanne.
Roxanne for $20 a month. That's Roxanne. Pretty serious. But you know, enough of that. I'm going to let you guys check that out on your own time.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to be Casper the Ghost, you can be Casper the Ghost. If you want to be Roxanne, you can be Roxanne. But that's all we have for you today, folks.
That's all we have. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you come back next time. And we hope you don't smoke crack.
Period.
Peace. ParanormalCrackTivityPodcast.com.